Welcome to the KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast, this time focused on financial reporting considerations for environmental, social, and governance issues. Listen to KPMG professionals discuss key points on these complicated areas.
Hello, I'm Karen Silverman, a partner at KPMG. And in this episode, we're going to discuss environmental, social, and governance issues, widely referred to as ESG. ESG has become a key focus of companies, investors, and regulators, and there's a wide variety of information available about this topic, including at our KPMG Impact website. Our goal today is to focus on what individuals responsible for financial reporting should know about ESG. Our discussion is going to highlight some of the considerations for ESG, as well as what we are seeing in the market. Joining me today are Timothy Brown, a returning guest and a fellow partner in the firm's Department of Professional Practice, and we are pleased to be joined by a special guest, Maura Hodge. Maura is our KPMG Impact Audit Lead Partner. She's an audit partner who has reported on financial statements of many SEC clients and has been leading the firm's ESG efforts for over 10 years. Today, she's going to share her insights of working directly with public companies in this space and help translate the guidance from standard setters and regulators into practice. Tim and Maura, thank you both for joining us today. Maura, maybe you could start us off with a bit of background about ESG, broadly speaking. I know you've been leading the practice for the last decade, but it seems like this has become a hot topic recently. So what do we mean when we talk about ESG?
Hi, Karen. Yeah, thank you for having me today. I'm excited to be here and have this conversation with you. So what does ESG mean? We typically reference it as a framework, and its goal is to integrate environmental, social, and governance risks and opportunities into a company's strategy in order to build long-term financial sustainability and value creation. So there are a lot of different components that go into ESG, but what's really important is remembering that all of these topics tie into a long-term company strategy. So when we think about ESG at the topical level, we start with the E, and that considers how a company acts in its role as a steward of nature, such as energy use, recycling practices, and natural resource conservation. The S examines how well a company manages its relationships with employees, suppliers, customers, and the community. So some examples of concepts that are social related are diversity, equity, and inclusion, employee health and safety, and labor in the supply chain. And finally, governance, or the G. This is concerned with a company's leadership, board diversity, executive pay, audits, and shareholder rights. And when we think about the G, it's not really a new topic to be talked about within the context of a 10K or a proxy. G issues have been around for a long time and are probably the most mature at this point. And then after we understand the topics that fall under ESG, we have to think about how they get translated into quantitative metrics or qualitative disclosures. And I'm sure we'll be speaking more about those. But back to your question, Karen, why ESG and especially why now? Well, we're seeing that consumers and employees have increasingly different expectations of the world and the businesses they buy from and work for. We have a new generation that's entered into the workforce and entering into leadership within that workforce. And I know, for example, my kids that are 6 and 8 years old right now are coming home every day challenging us on the ways that we use energy and natural resources and really asking us questions about how to reduce our waste and to compost more. So it's clearly on top of mind for many people today. But specific to the business community, and I think as a result of this pressure, we're seeing shareholders and lenders under pressure from regulators and the market to show that they're acting responsibly and investing sustainably. We're also seeing that as some of the largest, most influential companies are setting their own ESG targets, they're demanding action from their suppliers to help them achieve their goals.
Thanks, Maura. It's always helpful to make sure we are all starting out on the same page. I will say I'm glad that my one-year-old isn't asking those questions on conservation yet, but I'm certainly sure they're coming soon. One of the items you mentioned was the focus of regulators on ESG measures. Tim, can you give us some details on what we're seeing from the SEC related to ESG?
Hi, Karen. Sure. Happy to. And just first off, thanks again for having me back. I'm really glad to be here and share a little bit about what's happening at the SEC. I think to both of your points, just to get a little bit of off topic as well, my 12-year-old has recently led an effort in our town to collect bottle caps, which apparently can be sent off to create benches and things for the town and the community itself. So certainly a generational shift is more indicated. And this is going to be top of mind, I think, for the SEC moving forward as well. To kick it off, I probably should first mention that Gary Gensler is now in place as the SEC's permanent chairperson. And that means that we should see some real activity begin at the SEC soon on a variety of topics. And in particular, I would expect more is on the way on ESG. I'm sure our audience is going to be staying tuned into that moving forward. During her time as acting chairperson, Allison Lee certainly did make a splash, and she really was only in place for a little over a couple of months. Since Inauguration Day, Satyam Khanna has been named the first senior policy advisor for climate and ESG for the commission. Her role is to advise the agency on ESG matters and to advance new initiatives across the commission. We've then also had a reminder about the commission's 2010 disclosure guidance, which does remain in effect today. Essentially, that states that issuers should be disclosing material information about ESG matters. While this is not a binding rule, the SEC does appear as though it's going to be revisiting this guidance through a stronger lens. And that's because in March, they announced that the Division of Enforcement created a task force to focus on both climate and ESG matters. In addition, this topic appeared within the Division of Examination's priorities for 2021. Then, in mid-March, Ms. Lee invited the public to comment on climate change disclosures as well. So what she did was she asked the staff to evaluate the disclosure rules that currently exist and the disclosure guidance that I mentioned earlier in light of the growing importance and the focus on this topic. So the questions that were posed surround how to regulate this matter, what disclosures should be required, what framework might be appropriate, and whether assurance should be provided over the information that is put into a filing. In addition, there's a whole slew of other questions in that release. Responses were requested within 90 days or by mid-June. What the commission is going to do with that information once it gets it remains to be seen, but presumably some proposed rulemaking is probably forthcoming.
Thanks, Tim. That's a significant amount of activity. You covered a lot of ground there, but one of the items you mentioned is a new Division of Enforcement task force. What does that mean for companies and investors?
I think that's a great question, Karen. And really, taking a step back, what does all of this mean? Well, as of now, it's really not entirely clear. As I said to start my remarks, we're only at the beginning of a new 3-2 Democratic-leaning commission. What's been put out would suggest that the review offices are going to be taking a closer look at what information companies have put out in the public marketplace. Consider the industry that an issuer serves, and then think about what implications all of that may have on entities filing. If the staff believes that a company should be disclosing information that is material, then they may begin to send out comment letters to those entities. It's not clear whether the staff will start a letter writing campaign per se on this issue, which would suss out more information from companies about how they think through these disclosures. I do expect that we're going to see the commission host some sort of roundtable events or something similar to that. They've done a number of those of late on various topics, and this certainly feels like one of those topics that's ripe for a similar event. Don't forget also that on the human capital side of things, we do now have final rules. And though they are principles-based in nature and really not line-item required disclosures, it's going to be interesting to see what the staff thinks about what companies have disclosed. And I know here at KPMG, we're going to be tracking that. I'm sure our listeners will be as well. And we'll be looking at what the staff comments are and how many comments they're making in the coming months. Getting back to your question on the enforcement side, I think we're starting to see a focus through speeches and other statements that this may first focus on funds, other investments that are purporting to be ESG related. The commission appears to be giving scrutiny to how those vehicles characterize themselves to investors and whether or not that's a fair depiction of reality. Eventually, I think an eye may be turned towards the issuer community and egregious violations at first of disclosure requirements. We need to keep in mind that the lens they would necessarily have to take right now is that material information was not disclosed. So due to the lack of the defined rules, as I've mentioned, in this area, it may be more difficult for the Enforcement Division to bring any actions until the Commission better defines what is required.
Thanks, Tim. I do think that clearly raises the stakes for public companies when they think about these disclosures. Mara, as you are working on the ground with companies, what are you seeing with regard to the types of things companies are evaluating when they think about ESG disclosures?
So there are a lot of things to consider. Most recently, and in particular because of the SEC's focus on ESG, as Tim has just described, we're hearing a lot from the controllerships and the finance groups of our clients asking where they fit in the overall structure and governance. And so when we have those conversations, we'll typically start with understanding what the existing governance over ESG is within a company and help them understand how a lot of the reporting that is currently occurring is put together. So one way to do that is to actually look at the sustainability or the ESG reports that a company is already issuing and look for the graphic around what the existing governance is. I often find that it's really enlightening to see that and to see how ESG is structured within a company. Once you start there, you can have a sense for who is setting the overall strategy and goals and targets. Sometimes this responsibility sits within corporate affairs. Sometimes it's investor relations. We're often seeing it fit under legal and corporate compliance, and it really could be anywhere within the organization. But once you've identified that, primarily what they're doing and what their goal is to identify what have often been referred to as material ESG topics. And that materiality is really set by a company understanding what topics are important to a company's stakeholders, as well as to the business, and then prioritizing all of those topics to understand what it is that a company should be working on around ESG and what they should report. And that's how you end up with what we often see to be a 100 or 200 page sustainability report. So we have conversations with our clients and the controllership. What we tell them to do is not to expect that they need to take ownership over governance of all of that process, but rather understand what role you can play within the existing structure. You know how to bring process and rigor to data gathering and reporting, and that's the role that you can play in this process. I know that the sheer volume of data can really just feel overwhelming, so my recommendation is to start small, but start somewhere. You can perform an inventory and scoping exercise and to understand 100% of what is being reported around ESG, and then looking to think about what is most important to my investors and where should I start to actually insert that rigor. Once you go through that process and you've prioritized some of your metrics, we recommend going through a process walkthrough and documentation exercise. Then taking that and performing a gap analysis like you normally would for any information that is included in financial reporting. And then going through remediation and identifying your ongoing monitoring. And at the end, potentially contemplating getting external assurance of the data. We always say that reporting non-financial information helps to prove that you are making the impact that you claim or that you state that you're making. And that third-party assurance helps prove that impact.
Great. That's certainly a lot for companies to think about and evaluate. You talked a lot about the controllership function. And when we think about the controllership function, we usually think about accounting and the financial statements. So how do companies think about where ESG could have an impact on their accounting?
That's a great question, Karen. And the FASB has actually been thinking about that recently, too. They issued a staff educational paper entitled The Intersection of ESG Matters and Financial Reporting. And the guidance that they provided was really just at a general level to think about which ASUs is ESG probably the most integrated into or could have the most effect on. So at a high level, it's really identifying areas of risk and where forward-looking estimates could be impacted by changes to the business as a result of these ESG topics. So areas like going concern and uncertainties, inventory, goodwill, and tangible valuations, property, plant, and equipment impairments, asset retirement obligations, and contingencies. As you think about building out future cash flows, it's really important to think about the changes that you may have in your revenue streams. Are you creating new products that are more sustainable and therefore need to build those revenue, that revenue ramp up into those future cash flows? Are there certain products that you're retiring because they are not considered sustainable? Are there operational expenses and investments that you need to build into those cash flows because you've committed to reaching net zero? And all of these questions apply to different industries differently. We think about oil and gas, and they're probably the most common right now to see the impact. There's a lot of discussion around stranded assets and how that impacts the impairment of those assets. But as I had mentioned, all of those other examples could apply to any industry if you're thinking about how you're changing your products as well as your investments in the future. And one thing that we definitely cannot forget are income taxes. We're expecting to see more credits for using and developing technologies around renewable energy from the Biden administration. We're also expecting more regulation. So thinking about how that impacts your deferred tax assets and your liabilities, as well as creation of potentially research and development credits and things like that. And then on the social and the governance side, one of the major areas of conversation we're having with our clients is around tax transparency and paying your fair share of tax. So what are you disclosing and where are you paying those taxes? There's a lot of scrutiny in this area, and it is really tricky to think about, you know, what you're going to actually disclose.
Okay, great. That income tax discussion is really interesting and something I hadn't heard much about. So once a company has evaluated the accounting and the other possible disclosures, how do they think about what actually goes into their 10Q? Maybe, Tim, let's start with your perspective on this question.
Yeah, thanks, Karen. Absolutely. So I mean, I think there's a number of areas when we think about periodic filings where companies really should be thinking about, does disclosure need to be made? And certainly to the extent, as Maura was just mentioning, that this has a significant impact in your business, and maybe it's more top of mind, these disclosures could exist within description of business, risk factors. They could exist within MD&A, even to some extent to the notes of the financial statements, like Maura was just mentioning, to the extent that some of these topics have impacts on the financial statements themselves. In addition, the companies really should be revisiting that 2010 disclosure guidance and refamiliarizing themselves with the topics that are covered there. They should also be thinking through more current issues impacting the company today that may have evolved over the past decade since that disclosure guidance was released. I think from there, we're getting back into some of what Maura was mentioning earlier, which is taking stock of what's being put out in the marketplace already regarding ESG. Is there some sort of sustainability report being put out in the marketplace? Is there information on climate change, human capital, or any of these other topics? Now, this information could also be on website. It could be in press releases. It could be talked about on investor calls. Really anything that's publicly available, the SEC is going to look to and consider whether or not that information should be disclosed in a filing. So once you have that inventory, then again, we're coming back to that concept of materiality. And I think from the SEC lens, we're thinking about it maybe in the same way as Maura mentioned, and maybe there's a subtle difference. We've heard that some companies are thinking about whether or not they should be putting information into their filings through that SEC materiality lens. And I'd encourage companies to be thinking about any nuanced differences that they see in that area as well. Getting that information then into a filing hopefully isn't that difficult of an exercise because hopefully that information is already created. However, you know, keeping also in mind that appropriate processing controls should be in place with respect to the creation and disclosure of that information. As Maura said, maybe there's an opportunity to leverage some of the existing processes and controls that a company has. But if you feel like there's new controls or new processes, certainly those should be thought through as well. Let's not forget that this information could potentially be going into filings, and it may already be in the public domain. Issuers don't really want to put out information that could be construed as misleading or that otherwise is going to need to be corrected in the future.
So, Tim, I agree with everything that you said, and some of the ways that we are advising our clients to think about the information that goes into SEC filings and how to pare down the vast amount of information that's already out there is to really take that investor focus. So understanding what your investors are asking for. And some of that is through direct conversation with your investors. But we know at a minimum, they are asking for information reported in accordance with SASB or the Sustainability Accounting Standards Board standards and the TCFD, which is information on climate related issues for financial statements specifically. So those are all great places to start. And like Tim had mentioned, do not ignore the fact that you as a company have maybe made targets or goals and have been talking about them broadly. One example that we're seeing fairly regularly now is making net zero commitments and reducing the amount of carbon emissions that you're putting into the atmosphere. Understanding what that goal is and what time period over which you want to achieve it is really important. And I think the demand today is mostly qualitative disclosure. It's understanding what initiatives you have in place in order to meet those goals. But obviously, in order to prove that you're meeting those goals, there's a quantitative component to it. And so understanding how the greenhouse gas emission data is collected and reported is really critical. And the one area that I would recommend as you're going through that process is looking to see if there are ways to gain efficiencies over the collection of the information. We often see that most of this work is done through manual collection of invoices and input into a spreadsheet or into a system that aggregates the data. But the finance team obviously has a view and insight into the ways that the company already works and ways that you might be able to get that data more efficiently, either through service providers who are managing all of your invoice collection, or just adding another cell within your data input that asks for the kilowatt hours instead of just the dollar amounts. Or you can also use some estimation techniques and take the total dollars and back into the number of kilowatt hours used. So there are a lot of different ways to collect this information, and I think that it would be beneficial to many companies to think about how to gain those efficiencies, because we know you're already spending hundreds of hours trying to collect this data and report it throughout the year. So if you can bring that effort down, it would be ideal.
Great. Thank you both. That sounds like a pretty comprehensive exercise. Maura, I know you talked about the involvement of various groups within the company as it relates to governance earlier. How should a company think about this when it comes to financial reporting? Should they be involving other groups within the company and not just the traditional accounting or finance functions?
Absolutely. I think it's critical to be engaged with all of the individuals who are responsible for this reporting. So as you had mentioned, Karen, when I talked about governance before, there is a group that is setting the strategy and setting the vision for ESG reporting. But once they've set that vision, responsibility often gets moved into operational heads or departmental heads. So if we're thinking about a consumer and retail company, we often see the individuals responsible for supply chain involved in this and engaged in ESG reporting. For greenhouse gas emissions, like I spoke about before, we often see facilities managers who are responsible for that reporting. And so the controllership needs to understand who is collecting the underlying information that maybe is not necessarily financially related. But we often see that that relationship is already there because there's other information that's being collected and reported coming out of supply chain and coming out of facilities that may just be related to lease information or product information. But, you know, it's making all of those connections and identifying all of those people. And then once those people are identified, providing education and training are really critical. They have their day jobs, and often the collection of this data is just something that they have to do on the side or that they're being required to do, but they don't fully understand how it fits into the overall picture. And what we often find is that providing that education, it not only provides higher quality data in the collection process, but it also often excites people and gets them to think about ways to innovate and become more sustainable or to implement and act on the goals that the company has set. I have one client that is a clothing retailer, and you know, their story has been great because there are a couple of things that they've been working on over the past couple of years. And one example of that is, you know, they were trying to disclose the percentage of cotton used in the clothing that they were selling. And they would get a report out of a system that had all of the information about the materials in each product in one Excel cell. And it was really difficult and a manual process to separate all of that information so that they could then calculate the percentage of cotton used for their materials. Well, all they had to do was go and understand, how do we run a different report that breaks out all that information in different columns? And it saved them, you know, almost a week's worth of work in order to get that information. And now they can get it much more quickly and on a real-time basis. But as they were going through that process and understanding where the data came from and how to gather it more efficiently, it really got people excited about what they were doing and what their vision was. And they would have designers come up to them and say, hey, I have an idea for how we can change our clothes in this way. And does this type of material count as eco? And can it be part of that line? And so it really served two purposes: in improving the quality of the information, but also exciting people around the vision for their ESG and their sustainability goals.
Thanks for that, Maura. That's a great example. So maybe to boil all this information down, what are the two or three things you'd suggest companies focus on right now with regard to ESG?
First, I would say don't get lost in the details of the standards and frameworks and convergence. There is so much going on, and we anticipate all of this will evolve quickly over the next couple of years. So at a minimum, start small, but start somewhere today. Ensure that you have established criteria or a definition for each metric that is being reported and that it's documented. You can have it directly aligned to a standard, or it can be company developed, but it needs to be defined and consistently applied. When we start small and we make sure that we have criteria or definition, as regulation comes into play and as the standards are clarified, it's much easier to make small tweaks to your process than it is to start from scratch and to start over. And lastly, use your existing processes, procedures, and controls, and identify ways to efficiently use existing systems and technology to get your information. All this will be beneficial to you in the long run, even if there is not necessarily a requirement today.
Thanks again, Maura. That's great advice. Tim, I want to go back to you for one last question for today. Earlier, you took us through what the SEC has done so far. Do we expect more to come from standard setters or regulators on this topic?
We absolutely do, Karen. As I started some of my remarks today, Gary Gensler is just getting installed into the commission at the moment. So, you know, there is so much to be done in terms of thought processes and potential rulemaking on this topic as well. I mean, we've seen that there's been a request for comment. The staff is trying to identify the most appropriate framework for some of this information and how this information really will ultimately be disclosed. I think just like all this information continues to evolve, the standard setters are going to be reacting to all of that and trying to get out new information as they can. I would expect that this is going to evolve very rapidly. It's been a hot topic for everyone. I think all the constituencies involved are really focused in this area, as well as the U.S. government, right? So at this point, we're at the very beginning. I encourage everyone to stay in tune to what's happening. As Maura said, take a lot of that advice and start thinking through what impact it has for your company. But yeah, right now, there's more to come.
Great, Tim. It seems like this is going to continue to be a hot topic, at least in the near future. Tim and Maura, thank you both so much for your time today. I'm really glad we got to spend some time talking about this topic, and I really enjoyed hearing both of your perspectives. I personally didn't realize how far-reaching ESG concepts are in a company's filings and how much the process and controls need to be built around these disclosures. I'm certainly interested to see how this area continues to develop. I really appreciate both of your time today and the thoughtful and insightful commentary you provided.
Thanks, Karen. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Great. If our listeners would like more information on ESG, broadly speaking, we do have a variety of resources available for you. We have a website, the KPMG Impact site, that has publications and other resources available, including some other ESG-focused podcasts with Maura if you're looking for something new to listen to. There's a ton of information available, and I'd absolutely encourage you to check it out. Tim and Maura, thanks again.
Thanks for listening to the KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast. For more information on ESG, please go to our website, frv.kpmg.us. Stay safe and stay tuned for more on this important topic.